Welcome to another episode of the What's Good Games podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Renee, joined by Miss Brittany Brombacher.
Hello.
Miss Christine Steimer.
Oh, hi.
And returning special guest, Miss Naomi Kyle, is back on the show.
Woo! Hey, guys.
Thank you so much for being here with us today. We're so glad that you could come back. It was crazy because we were thinking about when you were last here was October of last year.
Yeah.
Just before you left IGN. And now you're in Los Angeles. You've launched your own show. I can't wait to talk to you more about that. It's going to be great. How is everything? How are you?
I'm doing awesome. I just got back from a crazy workout and rushed over here in traffic. But yeah, everything's super awesome. And I'm going to Germany tomorrow night. I'm flying out.
Oh, so exciting. Are you going to Gamescom?
Yep. Going to Gamescom. Going to be hosting for Blizzard. They're doing like a live stream. They do it every year. So I'm partaking on for that. I'm going to be a part of that. And then, that's pretty much what I'm doing there. And I have 2 days like beforehand to explore, but we'll talk more about that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Steimer has told me there is a church that is not to be missed.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. My friend,
just
too.
Just stare at it and be like.
Yeah, what? Just like drooling over. Totally.
Well, that sounds like a really fun time. We'll make sure to retweet when you get those links up so everybody can watch. Of course, if you guys want to follow Naomi on Twitter, it's at Naomi Kyle, correct?
Yep.
Just like it sounds.
Exactly.
And we're going to get more into the details on her new show and everything that she's been up to later on. But we want to get into a little bit of housekeeping. First, a giant thank you to everybody who stopped by our first live stream last week, presented, of course, by PayPal. We had such a fun time with all of you in the chat, and a big thank you again to all of our mods who showed up and were making sure that the chat was clean and people weren't being jerks. We could not do it without you. So thank you so much again for that. It was awesome. And we have a lot of PAX news. So we're going to talk about it this week and we're going to talk about it next week. So make sure that you guys don't miss out on any of the cool stuff that we're doing at PAX. So Brittany, you want to tell the kids about our awesome panel?
Oh my goodness. So our PAX panel is Sunday at 10 a.m. in the theater that I can't remember off the top of my head.
Hydra Theater.
And the rumor is, ladies and gentlemen, that we can actually stream this panel.
What?
Ooh.
We'll see. None of our panels have ever seen the light of day in terms of VOD.
That's true.
But we'll see if this is the one that makes the cut. It'll be a great panel. I have been told that I need to find my old fan fiction that I wrote when I was a wee lass. Remember, this was part of our Patreon anniversary stream.
Yeah, girl.
And I have a fan fiction out there about Dragon Ball Z and Final Fantasy IX crossover. So that'll be read in some capacity. We're going to talk about the games that we played at PAX. It's going to be like a little mini live episode while special guests. It'll be a really great time. Promise.
Wait, we will?
It is 10. Yeah, 10 a.m. Sunday morning, September 2nd. So that's Pacific time. So if you guys want to watch, all of the panels in the Hydra Theater are on one of the PAX Twitch channels. We don't know the exact number because they have like PAX 2, PAX 3, etc. So once we get the exact stream, we will, of course, be putting that on all of our social channels. I am hosting a bunch of other panels at PAX, which is super exciting. I'm partnering once again with Square Enix to host the Expanding the Life is Strange Universe panel Friday, August 31st at 12 p.m. Pacific time. All three of us will be there. So if you're going to be at PAX West, please come. It's going to be awesome. And we also are going to be, well, I'm going to be hosting the Just Cause 4 showcase on Saturday, September 1st. At 11:30 a.m., also in the Hydra on the live stream. Then I'm going to be doing The Shadow of the Tomb Raider, Uncovering the Hidden City of Paititi on Saturday, September 1st at 4:30 p.m. So in case you guys missed it, we put out a special mini episode last Friday where I got to sit down with some members of the Eidos Montreal development team who's working on Shadow of the Tomb Raider, plus plus a video with some new gameplay on youtube.com/whatsgoodgames. If you haven't checked it out, please do. I would appreciate it. And I'm also going to be appearing, because I like to be real busy at PAX, in the Kinda Funny Interwebsite Video Game Tournament, which is Saturday, September 1st at 7 p.m., which will also be live streamed.
Oh my God.
What's going to happen at this panel? I have no idea. Greg has told me nothing. He just is like, show up. You're going to play a game. It's going to be fun.
So I think Simer and I should get some WGG cheerleader outfits and just like go on like face paint purple, sit in that front row.
Yes, please.
Throw down.
That would be amazing.
We could do some war paint. I'm down for that.
I think we need to find some purple pom-poms or something.
Dollar store, ladies and gentlemen. I got us covered.
I'm pretty sure we can figure that out.
It's going to be awesome. And then the cherry on top of all of our awesome PAX happenings. You guys have heard of us talking about a meetup, and it is going to be the meetup to top all meetups that we've done so far.
Oh no, don't blow it up too much.
It's true.
I mean, I can blow it up if I want to. It's the biggest meetup we've ever done. It's happening Friday night, August 31st, from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Unicorn. And I have to tell you, we can't announce the exact details of who we're partnering with yet, but last year, for people who showed up, we had an amazing turnout. It was so fun. It was so big. In fact, the line was around the block that we said, you know what? Let's go bigger. So this time we decided to buy out the whole place, you guys.
Oh, snap.
Oh, my God.
That's exciting.
Seriously.
It's
going to be great.
What's funny to people who probably don't know, I am find out information sometimes along with all of you.
Simon, I thought I told you this.
No.
Well, now you know.
Brindy's like, what are we doing?
I just want to let people know that was a genuine reaction. That wasn't me like hamming it up for like whatever. Like, no, I'm like, oh shit, that's really cool.
Awesome. Yeah, so it was such a crazy turnout last year, but the upstairs at Unicorn was still open to the public. And so with some help from some friends, so we're going to talk about next week, we have been able to rent out all of Unicorn from 6 to 9 p.m., and that means we have capacity for 300 people to come to the show. It's going to be great. So if you guys are going to be at PAX West, we're going to be launching an event on the What's Good Games Facebook page, facebook.com/whatsgoodgames. Please RSVP. Please tell your friends, bring your friends. We're going to have some special prizes for the first, I think, 100 people in line. I don't have those details finalized yet, but they are coming soon. We hope to see you all there. It's going to be great. So that's going to be enough housekeeping for right now. We got some news to get into. We do have a couple of sponsors that I want to tell you about first. This week's episode is brought to you by Quip and Vincero. So first up is Quip. Now, we first talked to you guys about Quip a couple of weeks back. So in case you don't remember, let me take you on a trip down memory lane. When most of you walk down the toothbrush aisle at this store, it doesn't really take long to realize there are lots of options out there, and many of them are gimmicks. But the truth is, you really just need something that guides the simple habits most of us get wrong when brushing our teeth, and Quip is here to help. For starters, Quip is an electric toothbrush that's a fraction of the cost of bulkier brushes, while still packing just the right amount of vibrations to help keep your teeth clean. Brittany, where's the pillow? One of my favorite parts is the built-in timer that helps you clean for the dentist recommended 2 minutes with guiding pulses that remind you when to switch sides, particularly useful when tweeting and brushing at the same time. I like this. It reminds me when I'm on my phone in the morning, hey, you know what? Time to move to the other side of your mouth. And Quip's subscription plans are not just for convenience, but for your health. They deliver new brush heads on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5, including free shipping worldwide. Plus, if you're a traveler like us, Quip also comes with a mount that suctions right to your mirror and unsticks to use as a cover for hygienic travel wherever you take your teeth. And they're backed by a network of over 20,000 dentists and hygienists and hundreds of thousands of happy brushers that use Quip every day. Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/whatsgood right now, you'll get your first refill pack for free with your Quip toothbrush. That's right, you guys. Your first refill pack is on us if you go to getquip.com/whatsgood. That's getquip.com/whatsgood. Keep those teeth clean. Everybody needs to keep their teeth clean, you guys.
Mm-hmm.
This is Simon, true. Are you brushing your imaginary teeth?
I am brushing my imaginary teeth.
Your gesture looks a lot better than mine did.
Because it looks like I'm really brushing my cheek, but, you know, it's fine.
Is that the trick?
That's exactly the right motion, though. You nailed it. All right, so let's get into the news now. We'll talk more about Vincero in the next segment. This first news story, you guys, broke just before we were getting ready to shoot the show today. I'm so glad it did, and I didn't have to wait for the official announcement, which is supposed to be on Thursday. Diablo 3 is coming to Switch later this year. So we kind of thought that this was going to happen. We talked last week about how Blizzard put out this new video where they were hinting at Diablo announcements, that was more to come. They're going to talk about it later. Well, oops, Forbes accidentally broke the embargo and posted their news story early. I know, right? Nathan Grayson over at Kotaku writes, "The day that was prophesied by a light switch is finally upon us. Diablo 3 is coming to Nintendo Switch this year. The news was meant to be announced tomorrow, but it appeared today on Forbes in a post that's since been deleted. Diablo 3 Eternal Collection." Wait, what?
I just said welp, like
welp.
Whoops.
Yep. It wasn't before Reddit got screen grabs of the whole article, of course. Will include the original game, the Reaper of Souls expansion, the Rise of the Necromancer pack, and all updates the game has received thus far. You'll be able to get an armor set that makes you look like Ganondorf from The Legend of Zelda, because I guess Ganondorf would be mad about the devil muscling in on his crown prince of evil turf.
Wow.
It was pretty funny. And also the addition will include the Triforce portrait frame, a chicken pet, and Echoes of the Mask cosmetic wings. Okay. Plus, the Switch version will let you play multiplayer in a number of different configurations, from four-player local co-op on the same machine to four-player co-op on separate Switches without an internet connection, to fully online co-op, to having some players local and others connected over the internet using the new Nintendo Online service that is expected to launch in September, of course. Plus, you can utilize the new cloud saving features as well. It'll run you $59.99 and will be out sometime later this year. And a fun side note, they say this will be the first Blizzard game on a Nintendo platform in 15 years. That's crazy.
Wow.
Right.
Tell me how excited you are.
This is all good news. This is such good news. Also, Nathan Grayson, I've been reading his articles for, gosh, I don't know, like 5 or 6 years. He is so funny. I love his writing. Shout out to you,
He's
sir.
A nice kid.
Yes. I think this is freaking awesome. I think it's hilarious that the light switch thing happened. Everyone's like, oh, we know what this means. And Blizzard's like, nah, that's not what this means. We promised.
And I don't know why they lied about it.
Yeah, that was a little strange, but they did. They lied to our faces. But it's okay, because now we have what we wanted, and that is Diablo on Switch.
Also, like, it's okay that they lied to me.
It's okay, as long as you give me the product in the end. It's okay. I can be a little patient. I'm looking at the screenshot of Ganondorf, and if you would have told me years ago that, like, Zelda and Diablo would have some sort of collaboration, I just think this is absolutely hilarious and amazing. I cannot wait to be Ganondorf. And I love how they said you get a chicken pet. That's obviously a cuckoo, which is, you know, the chickens in Zelda that attack your face and try to eat you after you swipe them too many times. I'm just all about this. I think this is freaking awesome. I'm going to buy it again. It'll be my third copy of Diablo 3, but that's fine.
Totally okay. And we have a Dear WGG about this.
We do. Albi or Berto. I feel like I made this joke already. You did. It was a few episodes ago, sir, that we read your question. Albi says, or Berto, is having a Diablo port on the Switch enough of a reason to get excited over, or is getting to replay a six-year-old game nothing to write home about despite the portability of the Switch? As always, love supporting you lovely ladies. Keep kicking butt.
Well,
anyone?
Naomi. I can hop.
I definitely think that it's a really cool thing that we're getting any games like on the Switch. I want more games all the time. So I'm all for it. I don't think there's anything bad about having an older game on a console that people play regularly and use to travel. And yeah, I think it's worth it if you're a Diablo fan and if you're a Blizzard fan and you can finally play a Blizzard game on a Switch.
Yeah.
That's where I stand on that.
I'm like not super excited about this, but I'm excited that Blizzard and Nintendo
are doing things together.
I am excited for what that means for the future. For this particular instance, I'm like, I'm sort of done with Diablo 3 at this point. But like, this is really freaking cool that mm-hmm. they are now buds and like can make cool shit together, because yeah. I'm down for that.
Yeah, yeah, I feel like, oh, sorry, Brittany.
Nah, girl, you, because you're the guest. You got priority.
I just feel like Blizzard's been so just doing their own thing for so long that it's finally like, you know, how there's crossplay between, you know, all sorts of games now. I think having Blizzard kind of dip their toes into collaborating with other developers and big time like console makers, it's a huge step. And I think they're exploring different avenues, which is unlike them. You know, they kind of always have stuck to their own thing. So we'll see where it goes. Like Steimer said, I think it's very, I don't know. There's all sorts of ideas you can go to after that. You know, once they start doing stuff with Nintendo, will they start doing other things for other consoles? And yeah.
Yeah. I'm concerned a little bit about how a top-down game like Diablo is going to look on the little screen.
Mm.
I have faith that their port will look good when it's in docked mode connected to my television, but I'm kind of like, I wonder how it's going to look with all of the like item management and like kind of the smaller menus.
Yeah.
Because sometimes even on a big TV screen, there's like a lot going on. And so like on that small screen, I'm like, I don't know. I don't know how that's going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah. Oh, sorry again. Sorry,
no,
Brittany.
Priority, baby girl. You go on with your bad stuff.
And there's local co-op, right? That's what you said.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, even that element, you know, how's that going to work, and how's that going to look if we're talking about like a tiny little screen that this big, you know? I really see your point there.
Oh, you're saying local co-op on the same machine if it's not docked.
If you were trying to do that portably.
Yeah,
it might be a bit of a disaster visually, because so much happening on
so
this
so much happening
screen.
At once.
Yeah,
I mean, can you imagine people like is crowded around their Switch with all their like mini Joy-Cons and they're, like,
right?
all like trying to play?
Seems like it wouldn't be ideal.
That's definitely a concern, because I've played several games that are local co-op when the Switch is not docked and you can't see anything. It's gotten to the point where I'm like, I can't even play this right now because I can't see anything. I think for me, I may have even talked about this last time we talked about Diablo, maybe not last podcast, but another couple podcasts ago. I feel like I've played enough of Diablo where I'm not super itching to get back into it right again. But that said, I am craving Diablo-like gameplay, and there's no other game out there like Diablo. There's a lot of top-down dungeon crawlers that are similar, but no one nails it just like Blizzard nails Diablo. So knowing that I can take the Switch, and Jason and I were going to go camping this weekend, but because the wildfires are so bad and it's so smoky, we had to cancel. But my first thought was, dang, when this actually comes out, we could sit around a campfire and freaking play Diablo in the middle of nowhere together. And I just think that sounds like so much fun. Or even on an airplane when we're traveling later this fall, you know? I think this is awesome. If it didn't have the offline connectivity, I don't know if I would be super excited to replay it, but I think it's just the idea of playing it portable, which makes me really excited about it. I don't know, it's a little weird, but I am stoked. I'm gonna play the crap out of it.
We don't have a release date quite yet, but I imagine we'll learn more, if not get a release date, at BlizzCon, which of course is happening the very first part of November. I believe it's November 1st through the 3rd. Second through the 4th?
Possibly,
It's somewhere around those dates. But it would be a really cool thing if, you know, Blizzard came on stage at BlizzCon and was like, bam, Diablo 3 on Switch today.
Yeah, BlizzCon.
Didn't do any announcements about release date and just was like, go buy it.
November 2nd to 3rd.
Everyone at BlizzCon gets a free copy. No, they wouldn't do that. But, you know.
It sounds good.
Maybe they would. They have a lot of money.
They do. Maybe. And those swag bags at BlizzCon are usually pretty choice.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
All right, next story has been causing quite a few waves over the last couple of days. And we've gotten some questions from you guys, both on Twitter, on YouTube, and a variety of sources on Facebook. And so we thought, why not just talk about it. Ninja, popular streamer who you might recognize, explains his choice not to stream with female gamers. So this story originally broke on Polygon, was written by Ben Kachera, and now has since been covered by several other outlets out there. So it started with him saying, I don't play with female gamers. He said, he continued, wait, hold on, let me just read part of what Ben wrote here. Though Blevins, Tyler Ninja Blevins is his full name, isn't shy about being married, with fame comes scrutiny of everything you say or do, he suggested, and that can sometimes lead to questions about who you're sleeping or flirting with on the sly. Quote, if I have one conversation with one female streamer where we're playing with one another, and even if there's a hint of flirting, that is going to be taken and going to be put on every single video and be clickbait forever, Blevins told Polygon. Not being connected to other women online, that was something I made 100% sure. He said it was his decision alone to keep his streaming partners men only. Quote, that was not even her, I believe, referring to his wife. Yep. She had nothing to do with it. That was me. I love our relationship, and no, I'm not even going to put you through that. A growing Twitch means a diminishing sense of privacy, especially for women on the platform. Female streamers have opened up before about the difficulty in maintaining a separation between their Twitch personas and who they are offline, often at the behest of viewers who demand answers, lest they assume what's going on for themselves. Clearly, this is not the first time we've heard about online personalities, celebrities, whoever, anybody that's in the spotlight, no matter how big the spotlight is, kind of rumors circulating about their life and who they're dating. And clearly this is perpetuated by tabloids and mainstream entertainment media, always looking at like who's dating who, who's breaking up, who's getting married, who's getting divorced, et cetera, et cetera. So this caused, as you can imagine, if you've been listening to any other shows and any of the blogs that have been out this week, quite a few stirs. Lots of people have lots of things to say about this topic. Ninja responded after the story on Polygon came out and after clearly many people took to his channel and others to express their opinions on it. His statement reads, I wanted to take a moment to address the discussion around the article that came out over the weekend. While I understand some people have implied my views mean I have something against playing with women, I want to make clear the issue I'm addressing is online harassment and my attempt to minimize it from our life. It is something that affects all streamers, especially ones that make their relationships public. I want to bring attention to this issue, and my comments should not be characterized as anything beyond that. Having just celebrated my 1-year anniversary, my wife and family will always be the most important thing to me, and I'm doing my best to protect them. We are fans of all kinds of streamers and gamers, Kirby Llama, Julia TV, Holly Eats Suto, I definitely screwed that name up, and a few of her favorites, and we encourage others to check out their channels. I look forward to the opportunity to meet and play with all kinds of Fortnite players in the future tournaments and events. So, ladies,
why would you even do a story about this in the first place?
That was my exact question.
Like, yeah, I was like, this didn't need to be
I feel the same way.
Yeah. Like,
I mean, maybe I, unless he was getting pressure from a lot of people saying, why don't you stream with female streamers? I mean, I don't follow Ninja, so I don't know if there are people who watch his every move that they're starting to notice a trend of where he doesn't stream with female gamers. So maybe he felt the need to put out a statement. I'm not sure why.
Well, yeah. It's possible that he was doing an interview with Polygon.
Yeah.
And he didn't realize what he was going to be saying was going to be the highlight of the story. But a lot of times when you're doing these feature pieces and these personality profiles, when you do like a long form interview, like an hour or 2 hour long interview, you don't really know what the story is going to be until you're done and you're going through transcribing everything and going, huh, maybe I'll make this the focus of the piece. And clearly it worked out for Polygon. I mean, they're getting tons of clicks on this. Everybody's looking at it.
Yeah, I had a different gut reaction, and then I sort of read, like, so my gut reaction was, of course, like, that seems unreasonable. But then I'm like, I actually went through and I read some tweets from other people. So Dodger in particular, who was a streamer, she married another streamer named Sam. I forget what his Twitch name is, but he's also a very popular streamer. And she was talking about, like, when they got together, I'm literally looking at her tweets right now because I don't want to misquote what she said. She was like, some of my viewers harassed not only him, but his mothers and sisters. I remember sobbing on a plane because I felt so terrible for the way he and his loved ones were being treated. Someone hired a PI to find evidence that he was cheating. Someone else found a porn star lookalike and sent me videos of them. He received countless emails about what a scumbag he was and how he shouldn't be with me. Like, so I think it's really easy for us who get, I mean, we get harassment on the internet, but we don't get Ninja level of harassment. And to have that big of a spotlight on you is something that very few people can relate to. So I think it's like, I could sit here and give my opinion, but I'm not living that life. I'm not living that situation. And I don't really think it's necessarily fair for me to judge in that respect. Would it be great if he would like try and see how it goes? Like, yeah, it would be really nice for him to use his platform to help elevate female streamers. But at the same time, you have to understand your audience. And if he thinks his audience is that level of toxicity where it's going to be a big negative for both the person who he's streaming with and his family, like, then I guess then it's understandable, right?
I'm definitely on your page, Christine. Like, I definitely see that, just all angles. I was even going to talk about Dodger because I mean, she's a good example of someone who's experienced that, and she's not even, you know, as big as Ninja, so you can only imagine the kind of crazy stuff he and his wife would have to deal with. Yeah, my reaction is similar to yours in that I saw that and I was like, you know, they should just leave him alone, and it is his choice to protect his wife and his relationship. And yeah, that's pretty much my thoughts around it. I can definitely elaborate, but I think that's, you said it all perfectly, Christine.
Yeah, it's kind of a tough nut to crack, because there's no doubt that a celebrity of his size has a responsibility, right? And I know that there's been other celebrities that have come out to say, I mean, the one that comes to mind is thinking about when Miley Cyrus kind of came under fire during her really crazy days when she was singing about doing Molly and all these other things. And parents were being like, my kids loved you from, you know, when you were Hannah Montana. How can you do this? You're a role model. And she's like, I didn't ask to be anybody's role model. And it's like, well, no, you didn't, but you are. You know, and it's a weird position to put somebody in where you kind of are forced into the spotlight, in a sense where you enjoy the benefits of wildly successful entertainment properties, but also don't want to take that responsibility. It's tough, you know, like, and he kind of rose to this level of fame like really quickly. I mean, he's clearly been in the streaming scene for quite some time, but he really did this crazy 180 when he started working on Fortnite and just kind of took off like a rocket. If you look at where he was in 2016 to where he is today, it's like, it's bananas, his growth, right? And I think that with his marriage being so new, I understand his desire to keep it safe and protect it and make sure nothing happens. And maybe he's not as firmly secure in that relationship as maybe some streamers or some celebrities who are in longer term relationships and who would maybe be more comfortable kind of putting themselves out there in that way. That being said, like, the whole characterization around it has really shown a light on the really disgusting side of mob mentality when something like this is made a story. And that's something that we talked about on Games Daily earlier this week. And I think that's the takeaway here. It's not whether his decision was right or wrong. Clearly, everybody's allowed to have their own opinions about it, whether they agree with him or whether they don't. I think where we can agree, though, is that he shouldn't be attacked for his decision, because it's his decision to make. It's his channel. It's his content. Mm-hmm. And if he wants to run his show that way, that's his prerogative. I just always get so disheartened when I see somebody who is doing a lot of good for the gaming community, somebody like Ninja, who actually represents gamers very well. Like, in television interviews, he makes it seem like we're not all bad. And I really appreciate that about Ninja. And he raises millions of dollars for charity. He is a great example for a lot of other streamers and a lot of other YouTube personalities out there. I mean, don't go after him. Don't go after his wife. Don't be that person. If follow the lifelong motto of, if you don't have something nice to say,
only it was that easy
at all. Yeah. It's definitely not that easy. Obviously, we say not nice things sometimes too. But
yeah, I think the major bummer part about this whole thing is that I imagine, and what I think a lot of people took away from it was more the story of like, oh, men and women can't be friends platonically. But that wasn't like his intention. And I think he clarifies that, or tries to, and like the follow up, like, no, no. But I do think his community, which is very young and very impressionable, it would make a lot of sense that that would be the takeaway that they would get from it. Is like, oh, well, if I'm ever doing something with a girl, that must mean that I have something happening with her.
Yeah.
So Brittany feels like she's about to jump in. Go on, baby girl.
No, I'm just smiling because I agree. Everything you've said has just been so spot on. And I think the way that his statement was worded, it almost seems like it's more about the relationship being insecure. And I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's the message at all that he's saying. I think what it is like you were saying, Simon, the level of harassment that he could get for just streaming with a fellow female streamer. I mean, I can't understand it because I've never had that much of a spotlight. I can only imagine. I mean, we are so lucky to have the community that we have where we can talk about the gender pay gap in content creation and only get a handful of nasty messages, you know, and that's it. But, you know, when you're so popular and you have so much of an audience, of course you're going to attract the bad eggs and the people who just want to troll for the sake of it. And to not even be able to stream with a female streamer, like, that is just so sad. And like Andrea was saying, just how toxic and the mob mentality, it's so bad out there that you can't even do that. And I think, like I said, the message isn't so much that he's insecure in the relationship. I think it's just this internet can be a really dark, shitty place.
Yeah, and unfortunate for Ninja, that's like his platform. Everything he does is on the internet. And people I saw tweeting about, you know, actors and saying, well, it's like if, you know, Tom Cruise was like, I'm not, you know, acting with females in any roles, you know, it's not the same thing. It's not apples to apples. Like there's a difference between what Ninja experiences on a day-to-day basis, which is literally everything online and always streaming and having that feedback in comments and stuff like that. Whereas actors don't even have to, they don't even have to have a Twitter account and be successful and be in the spotlight and be considered a celebrity. So it's just this first time that we've kind of experienced what it would be like, well, you know, this situation with somebody who's just very popular online. And yeah, it's just unfortunate because I don't think it's the same thing if you're saying, well, an actor, you know, their job is to be in a role with in a movie that's just going to be available in theaters that, you know, people can talk about and be like, well, Tom Cruise put this in his, I don't know what they call them, those like lists where he's like, I don't want this and I don't want that.
The writer?
Or in their the writer or in his contract or whatever. You know, it's just not the same thing at all. And I don't know, it's definitely an interesting topic. If anything positive can be taken away from this, is that it's, you know, finally brought it up as a something to talk about. You know, how do people deal with being somebody's in the spotlight on the online and you know, the level of harassment that's been taking place because of his decision not to stream with women, you know, it's just, mm-hmm. it could be seen as a bad thing and a good thing too. And as his choice and like, you know, which is just a really good conversation topic, I think, if anything.
Indeed.
I'm going to, fix this blind thing because it's blinding my face.
I know. I was gonna say something.
Yeah, I didn't realize coming in here that everything I have is natural light. So I'm going to just take a second and fix that, and I'll be right back.
You do that while I set up the next story,
okay,
which is all about QuakeCon. So we missed the giant kind of mini press conference that Bethesda did because of when we shot the show last week. So if you guys missed any of the recap, we're just going to go over some of this stuff very briefly just to kind of recap, because they did have quite a bit of new information that came out of QuakeCon. Of course, Bethesda's annual convention held in Dallas, Texas. I was sad to not have been able to go this year, but I was very glad to be sleeping in my own bed for a weekend.
Yeah.
But it looked like it was a lot of fun. They debuted a brand new 15-minute Doom Eternal gameplay trailer, which was epic. It was so crazy. Some of the big takeaways from that gameplay trailer, if you guys didn't catch it, first off, please go watch it. It is really, really well done. But they announced that there's going to be an online component where you can invade other people's campaigns as a demon, which is kind of a fun idea, and you can do it with your friends. They, of course, said if this is not the experience that you want from your Doom game, you can turn it off if you don't like it. But that is a cool thing that they're adding. They also have said that they want to really flesh out the lore of the Doom universe. And so that's not just, you know, the Slayer going after the demons, that they really want to kind of make this world a little bit more robust so it feels like it has, you know, some backbone and some more robust lore elements to it, which I thought was interesting and also probably indicative that they're going to expand this franchise in the future. Did either of you three get a chance to catch the Doom trailer?
Oh, yeah.
No, I missed it.
Oh, yeah. My mom was over, and I was like, it was the debut, and I was watching it live. And I said, Mom, I'm like, come over, look at this game I'm really, really excited about. And she's such a champ. She just kind of sat there and was like, oh, wow, honey, this is really cool. Oh, wow. Okay, wow. How do you,
as you're ripping demons' faces off?
Yeah, she's like, how do you enjoy things like this? And I was like, it's awesome. I would probably be what you consider a casual Doom player. The only Doom game I've ever played was the last one that just came out. But I've said this before, no other game has made me feel like such a badass other than when I'm playing Doom. Sure, I'm playing on baby ass baby mode. It's fine. But with that music like pumping in your ear, in your headset, you're just like, yeah.
The music really makes it, yeah.
Oh, I man. And that. And that new, it's like a grappling hook, right? That you can actually, I am so excited. And I'm excited that it sounds like they're fleshing out the lore a bit. You know, maybe there'll be some more quiet scenes where you actually get to learn about the game. Don't get me wrong. I don't mind sawing things in half and punching brains out and stuff, but it would be cool to learn a little bit more about the game.
A quiet moment in Doom.
Does that even exist?
I don't know. Probably not. But they also gave us another meaty gameplay trailer for Rage 2. Of course, this is the partnership between id Software and Avalanche Studios. A funny moment on stage when Tim and Magnus were standing next to each other. I had the pleasure of interviewing them on the Facebook Gaming Live studio stage at E3. They're so lovely. And they just lean into the joke that Tim is this tiny man and Magnus is this giant man. So much so that they brought a little step stool on stage for Tim when they were doing the presentation. The game looks great. I had a lot of fun playing at E3. I'm definitely excited for this game to come out next year. So they showed off a little bit more of the car combat. They showed some more of the vehicles from the different factions. They showed convoys, which are going to be a gameplay mechanic. They also showed some new biomes, because in the first Rage, it was pretty much all like brown desert wasteland. And now they've got a rebirth happening where there's different biomes, including jungles and forests, in addition to the sandy wasteland. So it'll be interesting to see how that all comes together, because they are touting Avalanche's work on the open world as being seamless, no loading screens.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of exciting. I'm really interested to see how that's going to play out, but I didn't get a chance to see the new demo up close and personal. I just watched the gameplay trailer, which I'm sure some of you did. Am I the only one that's super pumped for Rage? Steimer, you have a secret love for Rage, yeah? No?
I mean, I like what they've been showing. I didn't play the original, but I did that interview with you, and I've seen the new stuff, and I'm like, I like shooting things and I like powers, so like this seems like a thing I'm going to like.
Yeah, you know, for me, I was watching the gameplay trailer, and I don't know if I think this is the kind of game that if I were a betting woman, I'd probably get like maybe 6 hours in, and either I'm going to be all about it or I'm going to be bored and walk away. Because typically post-apocalyptic games and shooting just doesn't grab me. I can't remember the last post-apocalyptic game that got me. But I'm definitely interested to try it out. It sounds like the game has an interesting culture with, what's it called, like the goon squad, the bandits, and, you know, the different biomes. Looks like it's not all so deserty and brown and dirty. Dirt, hyphen, Y, dirt, E. I think the vehicle combat actually looks fun, too, but kind of got some very light Twisted Metal vibes to it. And I've been craving a Twisted Metal game for so long that, I don't know, I'm going to definitely give it a shot, because I know you're excited about it, Andrea, and Simer is obviously going to play it. So, you know, anything for her and I to bond over, I'm all about. But I just don't know. I'm 50-50 right now if it's actually going to hold my interest. But we will see.
I think my only thing that I'm not excited about is the cars, because I just hate driving in video games. So you can drive the car, girl. And I'll just sit in the back and shoot shit.
Perfect. This has no multiplayer, does it? I don't think it does.
I thought I had co-op. Does it not? Am I making that up?
I don't know.
I think there is a multiplayer component, but I would have to look up exactly what that is. I'm not sure. It is a single player game, but
we're going to have to get used to driving, Christine.
It's funny to say that.
In driving in games.
I think I just made that up.
No, because it does kind of look like the game that would have multiplayer, right?
I think it would have co-op.
Yeah. Who knows?
Well, do me a favor and Google that. But let me just run down some of the other stuff that they talked about. They talked about new expansion details for Elder Scrolls Online. Arcane confirmed that Dishonored is taking a break, that they're kind of putting it on the back burner for a while to focus on some other projects, mm-hmm. hopefully Prey 2. And that there's a new Bethesda studio that was announced called Bethesda Dallas. It is formerly Escalation Games. They worked with Bethesda on the development of Skyrim VR, Fallout VR, and Skyrim for Switch. And, of course, they're working on The Elder Scrolls Blades, Fallout 76, and the upcoming Starfield. So they announced that brand new studio. Plus, Quake Champions, another id property, announced that they are going 100% free-to-play for all and forever. So they've done some free-to-play events in the past, and now anybody can get in and play Quake Champions for free. And if you want to get a unique character pack, they announced the $29.99 Quake Champions pack that unlocks access to all the champions now and in the future, which is the hook there. It was on sale on Steam last week, but I believe by the time the show airs, that sale will be over. So hopefully you got it. If not, wah, wah. And then the big story from this week, because the news from QuakeCon has been kind of trickling out over the last couple of days, and this has been being kicked around. Pete Hines, speaking to Andrew Reiner over at Game Informer, hinted that the Elder Scrolls Legends might not release on platforms that don't allow crossplay. He told him, this is Hines, It is our intention, in order for the game to come out, it has to be those things on any system. We cannot have a game that works one way across everywhere else except on this one thing. The way the game works right now on Apple, Google, Steam, and Bethesda.net, it doesn't matter where you buy your stuff. If you play it on another platform, that stuff is there. It doesn't matter what platform you play on. You play against everyone else who's playing at that moment. There's no, it's easier to control. It has a better frame rate on this system. It's a strategy card game. It doesn't matter. And when Andrew asked him if that meant that there's a chance it won't come out on PlayStation 4, Hines added, "We continue to talk to all of our platform partners, but those items are essentially non-negotiable. We can't be talking about one version of Legends where you take your progress with you and another version where you stay within that ecosystem or it's walled off from everyone else. That is counter to what the game has been about." So it was interesting, if you read the entire article over at Game Informer, how Pete has
he's a wordsmith.
Danced around
PR magic.
Yeah, danced around naming PlayStation 4. But it's obvious that's who he's talking about. But I think they probably got into a little bit of trouble from previous things that Todd Howard had said in, I believe it was at a conference in Europe, talking about crossplay with Fallout. So I think they're kind of treading carefully right now, because the idea that a publisher as large as Bethesda would not publish on a platform as large as PlayStation 4 is kind of wild, right?
Yeah.
I feel like they can take that risk with this game, though, because it's not like it's a huge thing, and it's not like all games going forward need cross-play or cross-progression, right? So it's interesting. It's almost like they're putting their foot down. They're like, well, you got to play by our rules now. And like I said, with a game like this, like, it's probably going to be fine. But if this was like Fallout 76 and they're like, crossplay is a thing or you whatever, then like that's a huge holy shit moment. But with this, I think it's a nice little like, hey, guys, hey, this is a thing and we're not going to let you live
it down.
We're going
to start making this a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good case study for like moving forward. Although, like you said, Brittany, it's not necessarily a strong enough one to make anyone change their mind. I don't think PlayStation is going to be crying that they don't have this game on their platform.
Right.
So I do think if anybody wants a change, it's going to need to be a bit bigger of a bet on that table. But
how do you feel about crossplay?
Yeah. Also, to circle back and correct myself, I completely made that up. Rage 2 does not have co-op. Or at least it has not been talked about, because
dang,
the only quote that we currently have is from Magnus saying, right now we are focusing on just the single player because the game is so damn big. We are focusing on making the best single player story that we can. And then they want to extend the life of our games to engage our players, provide updates and things to them. But that's like the only thing that they have discussed in terms of longevity of the title. So in my mind, it has co-op, but in real life, it does not.
Naomi, I was asking you, since we haven't really talked to you since this crossplay issue has kind of come to a head in the last couple of months, you know, obviously with Fortnite at the forefront of that. Mm-hmm. Is crossplay important to you as a gamer? Is that something that you are like hankering for on the regular?
Honestly, I haven't used it that much, and I am still in that habit of, you know, if it's a game that's come out on the PS4 and it's not on other consoles, then fine, I'll just play it on the PS4. You know, actually I've been gravitating more towards PC games. So, it's not something that for me is, you know, if it has it, it's cool, but it's not a deal breaker. Like, I'm not going to not play a game if it doesn't have it. That's kind of my stance on that. But I do think it's important. And I think that, you know, Bethesda's kind of baby step towards like nudging PlayStation or Sony to be like, yeah, maybe you guys should consider doing more of this. Might be, I don't know, a strategy play on their part, but we'll see how Sony responds. And if it changes, then it changes. And I think more developers are seeing the trend like Fortnite, you know, where it's a really popular thing and people like it and people want it more with the games that they love. Then yeah, I think it's a positive thing to have. For me personally, not a big deal.
Do you think that there is a game that could force Sony into changing their policy?
Well, I don't think there's a specific game. I think, like we were talking about Bethesda, if they, you know, start nudging, you know, if they do come out and like Fallout 76, well, we're not going to put it on your platform, Sony, sorry. Like, I don't think that'll happen. But if there's like a company that has the balls to do it, then maybe they'll change their mind. But I don't, it would have to be something big, like Brittany said, you know, it'd have to be something substantial for Sony to be like, wait, we really need to consider this now because we are almost like we're in a bind. You know, we can't not have this game.
Be more of a business decision, like a more have a business reason to do the thing versus it doesn't feel good for our players. Like, sorry, Sony, I don't think you care about that. Like, you need a financial incentive. Number reason and yes, in order to make that decision. And right now they don't have it.
Yeah,
money does talk.
Yeah.
Maybe Red Dead Redemption 3 is online mode. Grand Theft Auto 6 is, they're gonna be like, yo dog, Our game does so well on your platform, but we're gonna say no unless you implement. Yeah. I mean, that won't happen, but it would probably take something huge.
I will say, I think Bethesda is the one company I see even willing to ever do this. I don't think the other companies really care. I think they're kind of more in line with Sony, and that like they are much more of like numbers people. And does it sell? Fine. We don't. You know, that's. No skin off our back. We don't really mind. Do what you got to do. I don't know that it will change anytime soon. But if anyone is going to fight that fight, it would be Bethesda. Like, they're those people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been interesting kind of hearing different perspectives. Because I always just go back to the money. I don't think anybody wants to lose the money of over 80 million PlayStation 4s worldwide. So I think it's fine for Pete to say what he did and for him to kind of lob threats at PlayStation about not releasing their game on their platform if they're not going to allow crossplay. But I don't think any other publisher would ever do that because the business is so valuable for them and is such a large piece of the overall gross profits that they make from publishing games that they would never even consider not publishing on PlayStation for a major AAA. I think Rockstar is in the same camp as Bethesda, though. I agree with you there that they could. They have the power, the independent wealth to be like, we don't need to. But
Rockstar and even Blizzard, I think.
Yeah. I'm kind of the mindset, though, that people who have money like to make more money. Rich people want to just keep getting richer.
Funny how companies. That's how corporations work.
They're like, we have that sweet taste.
I mean, as much as we'd like to pretend that a big publisher, Rockstar or whatever, is going to stand up and be, we're going to do this for the good of the gamers. We're not going to. No. It's like, nah. These are companies.
Yeah.
I think it'll be maybe a trend. I think I think it'll be something that companies continue to do, or, you know, as more games accept crossplay or more developers accept crossplay across their consoles. I think, you know, maybe we'll see that, you know, they're just like, yeah, if everyone's doing it, we'll just do it. But I agree that money talks. I think that that'll be the big thing. You know, corporations, they need that money because that's how they're valued. Unfortunately,
that's how they make exactly. The games
only way they're valued. Yeah.
Well, we'll have to wait and see if Bethesda makes good on these threats about not bringing Elder Scrolls Legends to PS4.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that we brought up Rockstar, because if you guys caught last week's show, you saw that we did a special report about the Red Dead Redemption 2 gameplay trailer that was released. And after we did so, someone over at Rockstar decided to write in and respond to some of the questions that we had, which I thought was really kind of them. So their PR team came back to me and said, hey, saw the show, loved it, saw you guys had some questions. I have some answers for you. And I was
That's
like,
so exciting.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I just got to take a hot minute. I love what we do, and I know we're professionals in the industry, but I can't help but freaking fangirl out when someone from Rockstar is like, hey, I liked your show. And it's like, really? You really liked it?
You watched the whole thing? Oh, my God.
Going back to being a professional. Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, so I'm going to do my best to kind of paraphrase some of these answers. One of the things that they brought up was that Stymer was talking about your horse and what happens if you accidentally kill your horse. and they said, don't worry, because of the way that we're developing this living open world, if for some reason you're out in the wild and you accidentally kill your horse, you would be able to flag down another NPC to help give you a lift back into town, or you can try to convince that NPC to sell you their horse so that you can take theirs.
Or I assume can you kill, probably rob them and or kill them and take their
hijack
horse?
Their horse. Yeah,
that's definitely gonna be a thing for sure. They also said, well, we were talking about the camps, because that was a big focus in the gameplay trailer that they released, this idea of like setting up camp and taking care of camp and managing it, that you're not going to have to look after, you don't have to hunt to look after the camp. After the camp. That's designed to be kind of extra content. It's not designed to be punitive. So obviously there are going to be people who really love to just spend time hunting in the game, but it's not going to be something that you're going to be required to do X amount of times in order to keep your camp in some kind of standing. They had mentioned that when you do bring resources to the camp, like food, for example, it can lead to fun interactions with people that are in your camp. Or if you're out taking down bounties or interacting with the world, you know, making that Skrilla, there are benefits to sharing. Sharing is caring when it comes to being in a gang in Red Dead Redemption 2, apparently. And they did mention, though, that the members of your gang will, of course, provide for themselves. They are not invalids. And that they might have opinions if you do or do not contribute.
Oh,
I guess we're going to have to.
See, that's awesome. Now I'm excited for it.
So-and-so will remember that.
Yeah, so-and-so remember that. Like, I think at the comparison I made with State of Decay 2, where it's, I feel like everyone's like, we need food, we need materials. And it's like, dude, I'm killing a horde of zombies.
They're so needy.
Yeah, they're so needy. But if it's an optional thing I can do and there's an incentive to do said optional thing, then I'm all about it. That sounds awesome. I'm going to bring them so many hunks of bear meat, or a meat, as Stymer calls it.
Here is a meat.
Here is a meat.
Yay. They also mentioned that one of the ways that they're changing the interactions with NPCs in the world is that previously in Red Dead, in order to interact with somebody, of course, you had to like point your gun at them. You don't have to do that in Red Dead Redemption 2. You don't have to just threaten somebody in order to have an interaction with them. You're going to be able to just talk to them. So you can either escalate or diffuse situations based on who you're talking to, what you're trying to get out of them. If you want to be nice, you can. If you want to shoot them in the face, I'm sure you can do that too. This is a Rockstar game, so they do have a proclivity for her violent tendencies.
But did they tell me if I can knife a bear?
You know, let me look through the notes here.
Oh, did they send like an essay?
it's a lot. They also sent me a document that has quite a bit of facts on it. It's the fact sheet. Mm. So it's all about the story here, new level of interaction, first full new generation experience. Because I guess if you guys didn't remember, the last one was last gen. That's how old it was.
Yeah.
Which long is kind of crazy ago. To think about.
Do they touch on, Knifing a Bear aside, I think the most important thing actually people would want to know if they ever really confirmed how you being nice or mean affects your relationships and or the story.
Yes, they did. So they'd said that players can initiate or be engaged in conversation with people in the world. And these interactions, of course, will vary, but that different situations will present Arthur with different options, and that these options, it's up to you to decide how Arthur handles each situation. Conversations take place in the world, not in static menus or in dialogue trees. And this new layer of interaction applies to other aspects, including praising or scolding a dog, calming your horse, and much more.
How dare you scold a dog? Who are you?
What if it's a bad dog?
No, all dogs are good boys.
There are no bad dogs. They're all good boys.
I mean, I love my dog, but he's very mischievous, and he tries to do things he knows he's not allowed to do. So sometimes I have to tell him no, but then I give him belly rubs later, so he's
fine. You can tell them no. That's setting boundaries.
Yeah,
scolding is different.
But they do say that Arthur's honor will change based on the choices that you make, and varying levels of honor will have different consequences and opportunities.
Oh, cool. Okay. So there does. Yeah, there is a meter. That's good.
Oh my God. I want this game so bad. Please.
I know.
Yeah, so there's quite a bit here, and there's also some threads on Reddit, which they pointed me to, that have a lot more of these deep dives from some of the early interviews they did when they first announced the game, and they talked about some of these things. It's really kind of fascinating just how expansive this is. I was not anticipating just how deep this open world, this living open world goes. I mean, because a lot of times you hear that almost thrown around as like a buzzword, mm-hmm. right? That seamless open world, living open world,
living,
dynamic open world.
Breathing.
Right?
Open world. Yeah.
But it really sounds like they're so doing creepy. Their best to make sure that it feels like your experience in Red Dead instead of just playing through, you know, Marston's eyes. You get to kind of decide who Arthur is going to be as as a gangster.
That's pretty cool.
Nice.
I'm into that.
Me too.
Yeah.
It'll be good.
So anyway, I just wanted to touch up on that. And thank you so much to Rockstar for reaching out to us and for watching the show. We, of course, are very appreciative of the fun little gifts that they sent us. They sent us each a little Red Dead Redemption 2 tin cup and a t-shirt, which I will post a photo on Instagram if you guys want to check that out. And of course, the game comes out in just a few months.
Oh my goodness,
I can't
so
believe
exciting.
It. So many good games.
26th.
Be awesome.
Gonna be great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's gonna do it for the news, you guys. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're gonna talk about what we've been playing. So stick with us. It'll be just a moment. Welcome back, everybody. It's segment two of the What's Good Games podcast. And this section of the show, hands-on, where we talk about what we've been playing this week, is brought to you by the lovely folks at Vincero. So I learned from some friends that it could be pronounced Vincero or Vincero. So I guess you get to pick which one you like. I kind of like the traditional Italian. Yeah, it's just a little bit more robust to say with a weird Italian accent. But over at Vincero, their mission is to create compelling luxury timepieces with impeccable craftsmanship to inspire as many people as possible to elevate their game. They learned that luxury is a process. It's not about specs, it's not about price, and it's not about marketing term to be thrown around. It's about attention to detail. They were tired of cookie-cutter designs and mass-produced minimalist watches that have flooded the market. We've all seen them online. So they created a step-by-step process to craft every product. It's what separates Vincero from the competition, the belief that you deserve the best. Ventura literally means I will win, which is why I love it so much. And it's also why every one of their designs are rooted in the values of bold, daring, and pioneering. They keep things classy, but never are afraid to challenge convention, like us here at What's Good Games.
Yeah.
Now, I've been wearing my Ventura watch pretty much everywhere. I'm not wearing it right now because I was cleaning earlier and I didn't want to get my nice leather band full of cleaning chemicals. But if you've been thinking about getting a new timepiece for yourself or maybe as a gift for a friend or a loved one, I've got great news, you guys. They're having a 4th anniversary blowout sale. It's happening right now as I speak. Don't pull over. Be safe. But maybe you want to check them out when you get done listening to the show, because this sale is not going to last long. It's site-wide, so that means you can take a look at the men's watches, the men's bracelets, extra bands, ladies' watches, you name it. It's been a crazy 4 years for Ventura, and they thought simply saying thank you wasn't enough. So if you want to take advantage of the blowout sale, head to VenturaWatches.com/WGGSale or click the link in the description below or in the podcast notes, and you can check out the massive anniversary blowout sale that they are having. They are having right now. Again, that's VinceroWatches.com/WGGSale, VinceroWatches.com/WGGSale. Ladies, have you been enjoying your watches? I saw you wearing them at RTX. They looked so sleek.
I have, and I'm not usually a watch person, but they just look so good. And I'm like, yeah, and they're so comfortable. I enjoy it. I feel classy AF when I'm wearing it. Like, yeah, look at
dude,
super same. Stylish.
Yeah, Steimer just showed hers to the camera.
I've been showing mine to the camera because I haven't worn a watch since I was about in the 5th grade, and
same
since
that's
they
a long
like
time.
They very nicely gifted us these. I'm like, this really pulls your outfit together in like a really strange way. I was like, oh, is this how you accessorize? Like, so it's been, I've worn mine every day since because I just feel like I feel more put together when I have it on.
See, they're elevating your life. I love that watches are a thing that's are still around. I know a lot of people are like, why do I need a watch? I have my phone. I go, because you know what? I feel like it's super rude to check the time on your phone when you're having conversations with people, or if you're in a meeting, or if you're on an airplane, or wherever. And like, having a really nice watch is something that is a classic accessory, and they have so many great styles that match so many different outfits. I actually decided to try one of their other colored leather bands. So I originally got the gray leather band, and then I was like, oh, why don't I try the black one just to see how easy it is to swap in and out. And it's easier to swap bands on my Ventura watch than any other watch I've ever owned. So if you guys at all are contemplating, or maybe you're having trouble deciding between bands, they do have lots of band options to choose from. So do check out that anniversary sale, because it is a short amount of time that sale is happening. But thank you to them for sponsoring the show. It allows everybody out there to watch and listen to WGG for free, and we hope to always bring you the show for free each and every week. Now it's time to talk about video games. And yeah, the biggest game on everybody's lips this week, World of Warcraft. It's crazy, yes, how this game has had legs for so many years. And Naomi, you were talking about getting back into PC gaming, and yeah, you've jumped back in.
Yeah, I haven't been back to World of Warcraft for a while. So when this, you know, expansion came out, I was like, yeah, I want to get in on this. And it just is, I think a lot of people are seeing the hype and are going back to playing World of Warcraft after like many years of not playing. But I actually did play Legion for a little bit too when that came out. That was like a couple of years ago. But man, it's amazing. I love what World of Warcraft does with just being able to create new worlds every time, new towns, new places to explore. And then I don't know, I was just like playing with Kyle and we were going on raids the other day, and it's just like such a fun experience. I always regret leaving World of Warcraft when I go back to it. I'm like, why do I ever stop playing this game? So it's been a lot of fun to go back to it. And it's interesting content too. It's really good.
So it feels like this is something that is really pulling a lot of people in that haven't maybe played in a while. But I mean, World of Warcraft has a bad rap for being pretty addictive, right? Yeah. Did you ever fall into like a World of Warcraft hole?
Me? No.
Yeah.
No, I pretty much, I knew WoW was a thing And I knew people would play like ridiculous amount of hours, like years of their life, just not gone, you know, used up by WoW in a positive way. So I never like went really deep into playing that game until Legion came out a couple of years back. And that's when I was like, oh, I get it now. Like, I really understand why people just want to spend time in this world. And, you know, I was lucky that I had Kyle, who's like a complete just WoW maniac since he was, I don't know how old. And he was like able to introduce me to it. And I learned pretty quickly. Like, it's definitely a complex game to play. And there's a lot of learning to do and learning curve. There's a huge learning curve. But for me, it was just like, I don't know, like, I just love the lore, and I love the little towns you get to visit, and all the different characters that you, you know, get familiar with throughout the storylines, and yeah, just everything about it. It's really fun.
I've never
spent too many hours. Like, I'm an adult now where I'm able to like manage my time when I game. You know, I'm like, I'm gonna sit down, I'm gonna play 3 hours, and I stick to it usually.
5 hours later.
No, yeah.
I'm trying so hard to fight the urge to get back into WoW. So I played WoW. I played it on and off for the past, oh gosh, I don't know, 8 to 10 years-ish, maybe a little longer than that. When I first got introduced to it, of course, I fell immediately in love with it. My aunt played, all my cousins played, so it was always fun to group up and like go do little dungeons. I never did the raids with them or anything like that, but then when I met Jason, I introduced him to World of Warcraft, and then we went on maybe like a 7-month binge where that was basically all we wanted to do. But then what happened is I burned myself out on it, and what ultimately I lost interest in was I thought it was a little too easy, and I didn't like how the skill trees weren't super personalized. I felt like there were a lot of characters that had the same skills I did, and for some reason that was a turnoff, and I felt like the quests were too fetchy. Now, this was years ago, so maybe it's improved since then. But I have to keep reminding myself that, because hearing you talk about it and see everyone else talk about it, I can say what I've been playing. I've been playing Dragon Quest XI. I can't talk about it in detail, but like, it's like, okay, Dragon Quest XI and WoW, those games are not a good combination because they're both just like, argh. So
giant, they're giant.
Both giant games, and there's so many games coming down the pike that I'm just trying to stay away, but it is hard.
Yeah.
What's funny to me is that I literally just got a text message from Jessica Chobot, our friend, saying, girl, are you playing WoW at all? I'm back in. And I was thinking about grinding to 20 and then taking the level jump. So just like everyone's talking about this.
Yeah.
And I went through a much shorter binge period than you did, Britt. But it was an unhealthy level of binge. It was about, I want to say, 2 to 3 months. And I was with Greg at the time, so he can vouch for this, because without him, I'm pretty sure I would have died. I was not eating unless he had to put food in front of me to get me to eat. I wasn't really showering. I probably smelled real bad. I was basically like cutting anything from my life that I deemed unnecessary. I was going to work, barely sleeping, like, and just kind of doing that sort of level of attachment. But thankfully, like you, Brittany, whenever I do that, I burn out very quickly, and then I'm like, oh, I can't do this anymore. So it wasn't unhealthy forever. It was definitely a few months of like, oh, this is bad. This is not
that's crazy a healthy way Steiner. To live.
Yeah, that's crazy story. Are you hesitant because of that, of going back into it, or do you think you can go back
no,
in and
I'd
be like,
fine
okay.
now. It's yeah. just the reason I'm hesitant to go back in now is just mostly when I was playing. It's more for those games, I need to have a good group to play with. So the fact that Chobot's texting me about it, I'm like, okay, well, maybe like if I can like have.
Yeah,
yeah, and like you're playing. I'm like, okay, so maybe yeah, if we have like, a fun little group, that yeah. would be fun. It's always about the people for me with that game.
You're making this so hard to stay away, because playing WoW is some of my fondest memories. I love going to the auction house and selling all yeah. my herbs that I collected and getting money. And then, you know, teaming up with my aunt and just like wandering around. Like, we would call each other on the phone and just put each other on speakerphone and run through these towns.
Like,
and kill.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
You're
really
like, what
do.
What do we do?
Yeah. You out. Really do get lost in that world. And it is a great escape. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, with any game, with any form of something like this, it can be to a fault, of course, but oh man.
So is this where I confess that I've never played WoW?
That's okay.
Yeah.
I didn't play until Legion came out. Like, that was my first foray into really trying to learn the game and get into it. So not that it's not that bad. You can probably get into it now and be fine. It's a really good state right now. That's what I keep hearing. So
yeah,
to make you want to play it even more, Brit.
I would love to hear more about what's happening with Battle for Azeroth. Like, is there like, what are some of the new elements that you're really having fun with?
I mean, the thing that I didn't even notice, really, this is, you know, all from Kyle, because he's like such a, he just knows the game in inside and out, and I'm just not on that level. I play, like, you know, first person games and like single story player games. So I think for me, the thing that he pointed out and which I noticed was like really different from when I played Legion was now when you're questing or when you go to an area, you get all your quests right from the get-go. Oh. So now it's just about going out and getting those, and you can kind of plan out how you're going to go about it. Whereas before, it was you had to go and find the quests, and it was like a far away place outside the village, and you'd have to go and find all these different to like kick those off. And then once you're in that chain, then it's a little bit easier. But yeah, I think before getting into this, and it was one of the things I noticed right away. It was like, God, we have so many quests to do right now, but it's because you get them all at the start.
Wait, so like you enter an area and it's just like, here are all of your quests?
Well, you kind of, they're just, all the quests are a little clumped together more than they used
like
to be.
Oh, just like the quest givers are much more consolidated. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So it's a bit, it's like, it's just more dense of, you know, you're given an area to explore and you get your quest pretty early on. After having gone there, whereas it used to be more spread out, and so that's one of the things that Kyle pointed out, and I was like, yeah, it's way different than how we've been playing. Because
would you say that not the raids, not the dungeons, is the content still relatively easy? Are the quests still pretty like kill 10 tigers and stuff like that?
They seem more higher stakes and harder. Like, there was a time there where Kyle had left me. I don't know. He was off mining some stuff because his character does that. And I was left with these bad guys, and I just had accidentally triggered them. And
you
so I had like
too
this,
many?
Yeah, I just pulled too many at once, and I was on the verge of dying. Okay. So it made it interesting because he, you know, kind of came in last minute and saved me. And it was really fun to go through that, even though I was like panicking.
Are you playing as? Did you say?
No, I'm a paladin. Oh, okay. So I'm just playing, what are they called? Rep paladins or pre or what's the term? I forget. Again, not a WoW expert by any means, but I'm a pally. Yeah.
Cool. I also played a paladin for a while. I was going like the tanky paladin, but I forget what they called it.
Mm-hmm.
Sam, you and I played WoW together back in the day for a little bit, didn't we? Way back.
Did we?
Protection.
Yeah, I thought we did.
Maybe we did. Again, my life in that time was very.
Yeah, because we would send letters, mail to each other. Because I remember your name. Oh. Yeah, it was a good time. That was that was like 10 years ago. Jeez Louise.
It was a while ago.
Yeah. We gotta stop talking about WoW because I'm really getting the itch.
Okay, well, we have to kind of keep moving along here because we don't have a ton of time this week to get to all of the stuff that we want to talk about. And I know that there's a couple of other games to get to, but I'm glad to hear you're having fun in World of Warcraft. I'm sure we can get some kind of an update maybe from you, maybe from Stymer if she ends up getting in. And speaking of Stymer, are you still knee-deep in Ni No Kuni 2?
I have to tell you guys, I am really freaking enjoying this game. It's given me all the good feels. Brittany, thank you so much for, like, you recommended it before. I kind of forgot about it for a while. I then saw it on my shelf and was like, wait a minute, why don't I play this? And I'm so glad that I did, because it's just like scratching that itch. It is very much like you said, chicken soup for the soul once you get past the first hour of tragedy. And there's just something about it. Like, I would really rather be playing that right now than like doing most other things than talking with you. I love all of you very much.
Hey, no offense.
The only thing that I like, so I'm now about like a little over 10 hours in, which I'm probably going to keep my playthrough to about 35 hours. Because I have no desire to sit here for like 12 years. But the only thing that I'm like, I could take or leave this is they have like war battles or like battles on the maps when you are in your chibi form. and you have like little chibi army battle things, and like I'm just like, this feels a little bit disconnected from what I would want or expect from this game. I don't quite still understand this. Am I doing well? Am I not? I mean, I'm successfully getting through them, but God knows how I'm doing it. And so like that's the only part of the game so far that just feels really disconnected from the rest of it and just doesn't feel as good. But I don't even mind. I was like messing around with the building and I'm like, oh, what I like about the building is that they've kept it very streamlined, because the problem with me in building is I can fall into that rabbit hole where, oh, where do I want to place this building? Like, is it the perfect spot for it? And what is it? What, oh, you know, how does it look next to these other buildings? No, there's none of that. They are all predefined slots. You have no choice. They go where they go. And then you can like upgrade to your leisure and recruit people and all that kind of stuff. But they've taken away the parts that for me were the biggest time sink in like managing a building style, like build your kingdom kind of thing. So I actually have been messing with that more than I thought that I would be.
Yay. Oh, that's so high. What's cool about the kingdom building is that it's almost purely optional, is you don't have to, you don't be crazy like me where I would leave my game on, let my coffers fill up, come back and like collect all my coffers and continue to let it fill up. Cause,
oh wait, does that happen when it's in rest mode?
No.
Damn. Okay. Never mind.
Yeah. You have to keep the game going. And then, so your coffers gradually fill up with time, then you get them and then it starts filling up again. Then you use that to upgrade your kingdom. Yay, that makes me so happy, Simer, that you enjoy it. The battles you were talking about, the on-field battles, there are a few that are required, and it is kind of a weird element. So what she's talking about is that you have, like, these little squads with you, and then you have to go and take over parts of the map. I guess it's like a strategy game. Like, you would know more about it.
But it's not even really. It's, like,
a very simplified strategy, random-ass, like, element thrown into this game. And you have to go through and conquer, you know, certain areas. It's kind of strange. And you recruit people and they can be employed into your army. And
And they, the problem for me is like they all have levels. So you do, I think, like if, like you're saying, Brittany, you run into them at a gated mission where like you cannot progress further unless you do this. You have to level those friggers up. Like you've got to like, what? Like, no, I don't want to do these battles. They don't. I think the problem for me with them is they don't feel good, like tactically wise. I am running into battles and like killing the enemy troops, but I don't feel any, I don't feel any of that. There's no weight to it, I suppose is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, especially since you've played a lot of strategy games in your day, it's a very, very simplified light version of that. And so, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah. I'm enjoying it. I will probably, I'm going to finish this game. I've decided to like, because I really, I like the characters. I like the world. So that's what I'm bunkering down on for now.
Hand up. I know we don't have a lot of time, but Jess also just messaged me about WoW to see if I want to hop into the game with her to level up. But yeah. So we're definitely probably going to play some WoW. All right. What about you? What are you playing, Britt?
We've been wanting to get her on the show. Hopefully, hopefully we can coordinate it sooner than later. Everyone's so busy these days. But I wanted to take a few minutes to talk about something that I've been playing. I know Brittany mentioned that she's playing Dragon Quest XI. She can't talk about the game yet because, as you guys know, the game's not out for a couple of weeks yet. But soon she will be able to chat about it. But not today. Oh. Sorry, Britt.
Not today.
But I've been playing We Happy Few. So this is a game that was released in early access a while ago and just had its full launch last week, and is made by Compulsion Games and is published by Gearbox. So Compulsion Games is one of the studios that got acquired by Microsoft and was announced on stage at E3 as now being part of the Microsoft, under the Microsoft umbrella as a first party game. And when I saw this game at E3 Judges Week, I was really impressed by it. Obviously, we've heard about this game and seen snips of this game for the last couple of years since it's been in development. But now that it's out, it seems that it's pretty divisive, which is kind of crazy because so far I've been having a pretty good time with it, but I can see where people maybe would not like it so much. So for people who aren't familiar with We Happy Few, let me just read from the Wikipedia page for a quick kind of overview. It's a first-person perspective. The game combines role-playing, survival, and light roguelike elements, taking place within the mid-1960s following an alternate version of World War II. Players take control of one of three characters, each of whom seek to complete a personal task while escaping the fictional city of Wellington Wells, a crumbling dystopia on the verge of societal collapse due to the overuse of the hallucinogenic drug that keeps inhabitants blissfully unaware about the truth of their world while leaving them easily manipulated and lacking morals. Of course, that drug is joy. It's a pill that you take to make you happy and forget things. So you sounds start out great. Playing yeah, right. Well, it sounds great until you realize all the bad things that can happen when you're both on joy and both off of joy, and then you're like, joy is probably not that great actually.
No.
So it's really kind of interesting the way that they're bringing the world building and the storytelling together in this game. You start off playing as Arthur Hastings. I haven't yet progressed beyond his storyline, and that probably is because I'm doing a lot of exploring. So there are a lot of open world elements to this game, places that you can go and check out, abandoned houses, and there's loot for days, which is terrible because I'm opening every refrigerator, every trash can, every locker, everything that I see, I'm trying to loot. But it does have a lot of BioShock vibes, but I wouldn't say it's anywhere near the experience that BioShock is. And I want to make that distinction because I don't want people mismanaging their expectations, going in thinking that they're going to kind of scratch that BioShock itch, because I don't think you're going to get what you're looking for out of this game, particularly out of the combat. So now that I've had about 5 to 6 hours with the game, I can say that the combat definitely leaves a lot to be desired. So far, I haven't had any shooting weapons. It's all been melee-based, where I'm basically just like poking people with things or smacking them with things. You can do a non-lethal playthrough if you want, but they're out for blood. So if they're trying to kill me, I'm not trying to just put them to sleep. They're going to die.
Go to sleep.
Yeah.
The long sleep.
But it's interesting. So you start as a redactor, which is a role in this new dystopian government where you preview news stories and then you decide if it can go forward unaltered or if you have to alter it. And one day, one of the news stories that you read kind of like jars your memory loose because the joy you're taking takes your memory away. And you remember your brother, Percival. And you're like, wait, what happened to my brother? And so Arthur kind of goes on this quest to find his brother because of these hints that have happened and that you find throughout the world about what went down between Germany and Britain. And spoilers, it's not good.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing I feel like would be the major plot hole. You'd be like, oh, I'm coming down off joy. Oh, I have a brother? I wonder what happened to him. Guess what? Probably nothing good. And that's why you're on drugs. Like,
makes sense.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is that I haven't gotten to the point where I found out what happens.
Spoiler alert, it's not gonna be good.
Yeah, well, I have to imagine. So I'm holding out hope that there's gonna be some kind of happy ending for somebody in this game.
Oh no, he did. He's super dead.
Oh no, I hope not.
Oh come on. If he's not dead, like come on.
Well, we'll have to wait and see.
So maybe there are a few happy people and a few happy endings.
Pretty much.
I don't know.
What I think is really fascinating about this game, though, is that it uses procedural generation to create the layouts of some part of the game world at the start of each of your playthrough. So really, your playthrough is going to be unique to you because of these roguelike elements, which is something that I didn't really understand when I first played this game. I didn't realize that procedural generation was built in. And because of that, it definitely makes it a little bit difficult to figure out what you're doing, because walkthroughs can't give you, you know, like, oh, you go here and you do this and you do this, because maybe that's not the order of the steps that you do it in your playthrough. Obviously, the end result is the same, but it does kind of throw a wrench in there for people who are looking for something that's not roguelike. I did like, though, at the beginning of the game, when they ask you to set your difficulty, you can either choose, you know, like easy, normal, or hard. I chose normal, despite every bone in my body being like, pick easy. I chose normal to see how the experience would be, because some of you guys out there have given me a little bit of a hard time. I know you've done it in good fun about always picking easy, so I was like, all right, I'll pick normal this time. But you can do custom sliders. which is nice. So you can customize the difficulty on resources, because resource management and the survival skills are a pain in the butt.
Yay.
So it's like the criticisms that I've seen is that people don't really know what this game wants to be and if it does any element particularly well. I would say the thing that they do the best is storytelling, particularly in cutscenes. The VO work is really well done. I think the characterizations of these people, both the ones that are on Joy, the ones that aren't, and kind of how they interact with each other is really well done. The narrative work is really fascinating. It really kind of has the hook in me of like, I want to know where the story is going and like what happened in this world. And they've really kind of made it a mystery in a great way that incentivizes me to keep playing and to keep discovering and to keep searching for extra pieces of lore throughout the world. However, the mechanics in the game and how they all come together still feel a little bit jumbled, and it's kind of hard to figure out like where my priorities are supposed to be. There's a lot of collectibles as far as items that you can hold in your inventory. And of course, I kind of shook my fist at encumbrance, which is a big part of this game, because I hate encumbrance in games. I just want to hold all of the things.
Mm-hmm. Let me hold my wooden bowls and my spoons in Skyrim.
Exactly.
Just give me a bag of holding. The bandages. It'll all be fine.
So they do give you a pneumatic stash, which is kind of like a persistent vault where you can dump things into, and then whenever you find it, there's no limit to what can be in your stash, and you can just continue to dump stuff in there, which is kind of nice to have a little hoard. But learning how all of the items work together has kind of been a process. So there's recipes that you pick up in the world for certain items, but I learned how to craft these items, and then I find the recipe like an hour later and the game's like, you found the recipe for bandages. And I was like, yeah, but I've been making bandages this whole time. What are you talking about?
But now so you know how to make them for real.
Yes. So it kind of feels like some of those procedurally generated steps aren't kind of linking up together in the right way. And the difficulty ramp for some of the stealth sections has really been frustrating. So last night I played this one stealth section where I'm in a military camp where there's guards everywhere, and if any of them see you, you'll set them off, and you can't blend in with them like you can with some of the other sections, stealth sections of the game. And I had to play it so slow, because if you die, it like kicks you out, and like there is a permadeath option in the difficulty settings that you can turn on if you want to, and I was like, no thank you.
No,
but it just, it's really tedious. And I just got to the point where I'm now in one of the villages where I have to take Joy and blend in with all of the people who are on Joy, and it's frustrating because the Joy meter is difficult to indicate just how long you have. It does kind of have like a little bit of a countdown, but you don't know where you can pick up Joy. You have to find these little Joy mood booths that are technically telephone booths that you go into and then like dispenses a pill. You take the pill and then you're back out into the world. But if you let your Joy drop below a certain level, they instantly recognize you as a downer, and they attack you. They like run after you with frying pans and rolling pins. And I'm like, I'm like on my way like to the booth reaction. To get the Joy, and yeah. I haven't figured out if I can hold Joy in my inventory so I can just like tap a button to re-up my Joy pills. And it's tough because you can overdose on Joy really easily, and then the game penalizes you for overdosing. Ooh. So it's this really small window between being at the perfect balance of having enough Joy in your system that you can actually do a little bit of exploration in these zones without having to worry about where the next Joy supply is, before you either overdose or you go or you're in withdrawal. And if you overdose too many times, it like permanently damages your memory. And then if you're underdosing, like you're in withdrawal and you have all these other health effects.
Like real drugs.
It's stressful.
Here's how to manage a real drug addiction.
It's like
a
real life drug. There's a life lesson here for those who
don't do drugs, kids.
I'm interested in this game for the story. And it sounds like you are enjoying that as well. But it sounds like there are some tedious mechanics in this game that don't maybe feel necessary to be a part of the experience. Is that kind of what you're thinking?
Yeah, and I don't want to go on too long about this, but I think my biggest takeaway so far with my early hours of We Happy Few is that the world building is done really well, and I'm enjoying it, and it's enough of a hook to keep me playing. The exploration is nice. I like the art style, even though on my PS4 Pro, it chugs a little bit more than I would like. Textures pop in and out sometimes. Sometimes the NPCs kind of like skate across the screen in a very weird way.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh no, why is it doing that?
Yeah.
So I think that those are some kinks that they could work out. But I think the real problem that this game suffers from is that they had so many ideas and they didn't have somebody on their team to like edit them in a meaningful way to be like, guys, this Let's all sounds focus. Cool.
Yeah.
But we can't be an open world adventure, exploration, roguelike, narrative based game and like do all of those things well, right? That they need to kind of, and also don't forget survival and stealth elements. Let me throw those into the fucking pot too. So I think that's really what's happening here and why this game took so long to come out is that they kept iterating and iterating and iterating, but at no point does it seem like somebody on their team said, hey, maybe we should stop adding features and start polishing what we have.
Maybe instead of iterating, you should edit.
Yeah.
Editorate.
That's probably what needed to happen here, but so far, sorry, I accidentally hit the wrong button there. So far, it's been fun, and I'm interested to learn more and see how these storylines play out.
Cool. All right. Sounds like the story is the main thing, and they should have focused on that.
Yeah,
because like that's what I think the world and everything that they brought, and maybe they should have made it more Bioshocky, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But. A lot.
Yeah,
check it out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely, if you guys are, I don't know why my stream deck is freaking out. Sorry, everybody.
No.
On the OBS broadcast. I don't know. Oh, no. Oh, we lost
Christine.
Steimer.
We lost you.
What?
Oh, no. Everything's popping in and out of texture. What's happening?
What's going on? How did
your
that
camera
close?
Is gone.
Like, okay. No, Skype just closed, but I can still hear you, but I don't know how it closed.
Huh.
Weird,
and
yeah.
I don't know what the hell's going on. That's super strange.
Technology.
This is weird indeed.
Okay, I'm back.
Oh, there she's back, ladies and gentlemen. She's
so
back.
So bizarre. I have no idea what just happened.
So I'm going to go ahead and use this opportune time to take a short break before we come back to our final segment of the show. If you guys have any questions about the games, of course, feel free to reach out to us. And we are going to take a short break, and we will be right back. Welcome back, everybody. We have sorted out our technical difficulties. And I believe Britt has a fun little gift that she's going to put up on our social channel so you can see exactly what went wrong. In case you missed it, don't forget twitter.com/whatsgood_games, facebook.com/whatsgoodgames. So we are here to talk about our dear friend, Miss Naomi Kyle, who has a brand new show.
I do.
Congrats, by the way, on launching your show. I know it's been a couple of weeks now, but
yes.
How's joining the podcast community been like for you?
It's been great. And thank you so much for saying such nice things. I think what I've always wanted to do after leaving IGN was like still have a foot into gaming and still talking about it in some way and still having content going out there. Because I mean, I was on a show every day for like 6.5 years. So like, there are people out there, at least I think so, that want to still see me talk about games and do stuff around the gaming industry. So I was like, let's just do a podcast and keep it pretty low key. It's only twice a month. We have one episode go up a certain week of the month. Usually it's like the second week and then the last week of the month. It's called Everybody Games, and it's super casual. You know, we talk about current stuff, but sometimes we just go into different tangents about, you know, politics sometimes, but we try to avoid it. Sometimes it happens. especially in this climate. And we touch on the games that, you know, our guest loves. We always like want to have a guest there who, you know, we think either knows a lot about games or knows very little, or, you know, is kind of in between, or as someone who has a very interesting career that has nothing to do with games, but somehow they're like super just hardcore WoW players or something, and to talk to them about that. So we've had some great guests. We've had Jared Petty on. I'm trying to think who else. We're having Ash Crossan come on tonight. So she's going to be recording with us right after this. This is a set, by the way. This is like, you can kind of see it, I think, in the shot.
Yeah, we can definitely see it.
Yeah, there's like some benches, and it's three people. It's myself, Kyle. We're like the main hosts. And then we have a random guest who we awkwardly position in the middle of both of us to chat about games. And it's been super fun, and we're on episode 6. We're recording that tonight. So it's been good. It's been a great way to keep me busy. You know, one of the hard things to do after leaving a big corporation and a 9-to-5 job is like, okay, now what? Like, I literally have all the time in the world, and I could decide to do nothing, or I can, you know, schedule some stuff out and be productive. So this was like a good way to like make sure I still did something. So yeah, that's basically been the reason for the podcast, and kind of you got a little insight on what it is too. But yeah, it's been
that's
really
awesome.
Fun.
So I'm going to put the question to you that we get all the time, which is, you know, like, what kind of challenges have you faced in starting a podcast? Because obviously you have a heavy video background, much like I did. And have you had any kind of challenges that you didn't anticipate, or any stories about things that you've had to overcome in the production process, in making the show?
Yeah, there's always production stuff that could go wrong, like the day of. But that's technical stuff, and usually, and I'm lucky to say this, Kyle is the one who deals with that. So I don't really have to be super worried, but, you know, OBS has, you know, a history of sometimes not working for whatever reason, or it has like little bugs that you just have to kind of know about, and, you know, you can't anticipate when they're going to start bugging out, but you know, sometimes that'll be something you run into, but that's just technical stuff. I think the overarching thing for me was just getting the podcast done, and like setting a deadline to make it happen. So if you're like, I'm going to start a podcast, you know, you can always say, I'm just going to do it tomorrow, or I'm going to do it some other time. But it's like setting a deadline really changes the game. And if you like, you know, stick to it, then it eventually does happen. And you know, then you're kind of, you're in that mindset of like, I'm going to do a podcast every 2 weeks or however many times you want. So I think doing it, and then there's the challenge, of course, of making a set. And this is, you know, in one of my bedrooms in my apartment. So the challenge was figuring out how to use the space intelligently. So there was a lot of pre-planning, how much it was going to cost, like how much budget wise could I spend on all of this? So setting a budget is super important. And, you know, what materials to get, like I had to figure out what size of table I needed, and finding it, like where do I even start? If IKEA by chance has the perfect size, I'm going to go to IKEA, but you have to do that research beforehand. And it all kind of came together once I just buckled down. I knew I had a set price of like the things I wanted to buy, a set price on how much I wanted to spend. And I just started buying. And it was a little nerve-wracking at first, because you're like, oh, there goes my money. Bye. Okay, hope this works. But yeah, so, and then like putting up these soundproofing things, like I anticipated a certain number of them, and then I had to order more, like halfway
it's
through
never
setting
enough.
It. Yeah. And we were like, we're doing this week. Like, we need to get this fast. Thankfully for, you know, Amazon Prime, and it's amazing. Shipping, 2-day shipping stuff that saved the day. But yeah, I think those were kind of the main things. And then making sure we have guests, you know, like how many people are willing to drive to my place in Los Angeles? Like, how many people even have a car? Yay, Christine. Okay. Definitely. You guys are all super invited. We can actually fit 2 guests. We have another bench that we could use and another mic. So we could technically have 2 of you guys on at a time. Or maybe we'll figure out something where we can get all 3 of you. That'd be awesome. But yeah, so because
we'll
we do have
Kyle
a small
out.
Space.
We'll be like, hey, Kyle, you're cool and all, but we're kicking you out for this episode.
Yeah, maybe we just do that and just have the 4 of us. I'm sure Kyle won't mind. He likes the technical stuff, actually, a lot. So Maybe he'll make the exception. I don't know. So I think that those were some of the challenges. And yeah, like making sure guests are available. And like sometimes people are like, no, man, I can't do it for like another 3 weeks. And then you're like, okay, shit, we need to like record an episode this week. Who do we get? And most people so far, crossing fingers and knock on wood, that they've all been super down to drive, you know, in Los Angeles traffic to get here. And just super down to be a part of it. And every time we've had a guest, every guest has been super, you know, present and excited to be there and like, you know, wanting to talk about whatever the subject matter is and whatever their new project is, and to talk about games. So it's been a super great experience and I just hope it continues that way. Yeah. There you go. That's those are some awesome. Of the challenges, generally speaking. There's always something. But just be prepared for that.
Sometimes it feels like it's never ending, too. Yeah. So we just experienced one. You.
So, you know the struggle.
I'm still experiencing it. Britt, her colors are still dancing around on my computer. It's
you had too much joy, Stammer.
Oh, my God. No, legitimately, that's kind of what it feels like. It looks like you just I'm tripping out, but only for you.
Now I feel like I need to see this. Oh, okay. I see it now. Yeah, that's wild.
It's not good.
Also amazing. So what's it been like since you've left the Bay? You know, you mentioned that you're in Los Angeles now, and you know, we've talked about the amazing creator scene and the people who are streaming and doing YouTube and all other kinds of content creation in LA. Have you found that you're kind of meeting some of these people, or yes. Are you still kind of, you know, finding your way around the city?
I mean, I'm always figuring out new ways to avoid traffic, which pretty much is impossible.
It's not impossible. It's weekends, but in the morning. Nobody in LA gets up.
Okay. All right. I will make sure to note that. But yeah, I think it's definitely been a big change because San Francisco, you know, some people are out there, but a lot of people are working 9 to 5 and it's just a different environment. But Los Angeles is filled with people who, I don't know if their thing is Instagram or if their thing is whatever.
Flexible work schedules, as you might
and
say.
Have flexible, yeah, exactly. People who literally just live off their YouTube content and whatever money they make off that. And content creators are just aplenty here. And it is a content creator's industry right now. Like it's the thing to be doing and it's very lucrative. So luckily there's a lot of people who, you know, have the means to come out here, have the schedule, like the time available. And so it's super been helpful for the podcast. You know, had I been doing it out of the Bay, definitely would have been a challenge just because we have to have a different guest every week, or that's the way we've like structured it. So I think, yeah, it's just been super helpful having people be able to come out to, you know, where I live and be willing to do that. And yeah, I definitely noticed a difference like coming out here. Everyone's like, oh, you're in the LA now. Let's do some content. And it's, I've been nonstop. I've started working with Oh My God Firefox, who I was a fan of for a long time. She's out here.
Oh, yeah. Sonia's great.
Yeah. Sonia's amazing. Oh, yeah. I still call her Oh My God Firefox. Yeah. But yeah, just like so many content creators. I got to be on the Felicia Day fundraising stream for that whole day. And I was able to meet even more people that, you know, like Jovenshire and just so many people who live out here.
Oh,
and
Joven
like,
is my homie from way back in our Mahalo days.
So it's like that sort of environment and being so close to, and then San Diego Comic-Con too was like just a drive away. So, you know, definitely took advantage of that and met all sorts of content creators there. And, you know, businesses come out here. It's like the hub for content creation. So they come out here and they'll reach out if they know that this is where I live now. And it's just been crazy meeting all the different people and working with them. Because you never know what could happen. You know, there's always a reason to make content, some sort of content. It could be for anything.
Yeah. Oh, Naomi, the kind of content I want to make with you is poutine. So we need to get back.
We
on
need
that.
To do it legit for real this yes. time, because we did the kind of you
we
know
the
budget
poor man's poutine.
Yeah, the poor man's poutine. But we should, you know, yeah, we should definitely have a poutine evening, and wine and dine and eat some great, delicious French fries, gravy, and cheese.
Can I come?
Yes.
I want to come to Pub Sports.
Yeah, we should just make the whole Everybody Games podcast.
We're all poutine making. Wow. Like,
we'll just, yeah.
I will fly.
It'll just be one big poutine taste test.
Yes, yes.
We did that too, kind of. We had like two different kinds of, or a few different kinds of gravy.
We did, yeah, because I had purchased a ridiculous amount of different gravies for that.
But yeah. Oh, that sounds so good. I've never had good poutine ever, ever.
Oh, man.
Ever.
If there's a smokes poutine out where you are, that's the best place. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, Los Angeles has one, I think.
No. They
what?
Fucking closed.
What? So, like, they're.
So one night I was with a friend and she was like, I really want poutine. I was like, oh, I don't think that they really have that here. And she was like, no, there's this one place like that Terry from IGN told me about. And I was like, cool, let's try it. And we looked it up and it had closed down. And we were like,
no.
Oh, no.
Oh, man. Smokes.
And
oh,
I think maybe they're going to reopen.
According to their website, they have a location in Hollywood.
No, that one's it dunzo, permanently closed.
What? Bummer.
That's weird. Why?
They might still have it in the Bay. I know they have one in Burbank. Nope.
There's one in LA.
What am I thinking? Bakersfield? What? What's the other B letter region
Berkeley
in San Francisco?
Is what you're thinking.
Berkeley. That's the one. That's the one.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking on their website right now and I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to drive to Berkeley for poutine.
I don't know, but like April 23rd of this year, there's an article in the LA Eater that's like, smokes poutine just randomly closed.
Oh, man.
And you're like, what? What? What?
Maybe we could do a trip to Vancouver or something. Like, get on the set of some show being shot there and we could just be like, yeah, this is we're working here. But really, we're just there for poutine.
Business right off. Yes. Here we go.
I'm totally all about this plan. Before I let you go, I wanted to ask just one question since I have you here.
Yes.
And I know we talked about this a little bit before we started recording tonight. And a lot of people out there are talking about this as this story develops. And since we have two former IGN employees here, I wanted to get your hot take on the issue. So Gregory Horton wrote into Dear WGG and writes, hi, ladies. What are your thoughts on the plagiarism incident at IGN involving one of their now fired reviewers? If I'm not mistaken, Steimer used to be editor-in-chief of an IGN newsletter that included game scores, so I'm very interested in hearing her thoughts on this topic. P.S. One of the only thoughts I have left on that IGN newsletter I used to read way back in 2010 or 2011 is, quote, this is something special, and I can see how everyone credited on this newsletter is going to go very far in the gaming industry, end quote. I'm so proud of how far Steimer, Greg Miller, and many others have gone in this industry today since I first discovered them in that newsletter. It is a shame that Philip may never know such success now that after what he has allegedly done. I hope that everyone at IGN sees Steimer as a role model for how good things can happen for those who do it the right way.
That's right, girl.
Don't plagiarize anything. Dude, it's a real low bar to set, man. But yeah. Naomi, did you want to?
Well, I never met. What's his name? Philip.
Philip.
I should probably know this. But yeah, I think for me, it was definitely gut wrenching when I first read that because I was like, how can someone do that so blatantly? I was listening, you know, I was watching all the videos, or there was like the comparison video that went up, which basically started this whole thing. I was watching that and I was like, I can't even continue to listen to this. It's so blatantly being copied off this other YouTuber. And, so I was like, God, like I don't even like thinking about it. The fact that happened. I don't know. I feel like it is crazy to me that it happened and he got fired and there's still more coming out. And he put out a video and not even owning up to it by any means. And challenging people to go out there and find more plagiarism. And then they found it. So what is his thought process? Like, what is he thinking? I don't know, psycho? Like, is there a term for what this is? Because delusional would be the go-to one for me, for sure. Because I can't wrap my brain around just not knowing what to do in this situation. You've been caught plagiarizing something and you probably know, or maybe you're just lying to yourself, that you've done this many times before and you probably don't want to have to suffer more fallout for what has already happened, because, you know, people will inevitably find that you've plagiarized more. But no, I'm just going to go outright and challenge these people to find and scour the internet, find my LinkedIn that is also plagiarized above
everything. Talking was like, hold my beer, I got this.
Yeah.
Don't worry
I mean,
about it.
It's just crazy. And I don't know the mental gymnastics that this guy probably had to go through just to in this whole ordeal, and in his experience of having to, you know, be fired and having to put out a video and talk about, you know, what he did wrong, which he didn't even do, and
taking down the
his
video.
His career is essentially over. Crazy. And how do you get back from this? And does he even want to? Does he want to continue to think that he's totally justified in what he did? I mean, he's not going to work with in content creation or for any media outlet at this point. He's dug his cell, somehow he's dug his grave deeper. And that to me is just mind-boggling.
Well,
that
when
someone
you don't
could
do
that
do
and on a public platform. What?
I said, well, when you don't actually do the work, it's pretty easy to dig that hole.
Yeah.
To clarify, I want to just clarify this person who's saying used to be editor-in-chief of the newsletter. I wasn't. That's not what my title was ever. I did run a newsletter. My title when I left IGN was executive editor of the Xbox channel. But that's it. I was never EIC of anything. But also, I've definitely seen some comments on the internet of people being like, IGN is the largest gaming website in the world. How did they not have any idea? And to that, I would like to say that everything at IGN is always on fire. And you are constantly just putting out content and like you don't really have time. You trust your fellow editors. There's a massive amount of trust in that editorial pool. And so for someone to betray their trust like this, I get it. Like that's got to be the world's worst feeling, to feel like you have gone out with, like, because IGN is very like tight knit. Like you'll go out to drinks with this person, you'll like hang out with them, and then for them to kind of to turn out to be a plagiarist, I can't imagine what that feels like. I, like Naomi, have never worked with this person. I left IGN a very long time ago, but I still have friends who work there today. And I just feel really, really bad for all of them, because I know that feeling that level of betrayal just sucks. Like,
yeah.
Because anybody who gets hired there, I think Altano kind of wrote something like this. Like, you just assume that, like, because this is such a great, like, a cool job and you get to write about video games, that everybody would be equally excited about it and want to put in that work. And so for someone to not do that, to blatantly disregard it, to just copy other people's work and get away with it for as long as he did. Because, again, like, there is no running it through a plagiarism check before we publish on the site. That's not a thing that happens. There are editorial checks, like you will have somebody else read through it to try and make sure that they catch any errors. It's never that intensive of an editing process, I will say. Like, usually it's mostly light editing from what that was my experience. But you're not checking it to make sure that he didn't rip it off of someone else, because you assume that in the hiring process and all these things, you will find somebody who's genuinely excited and passionate and like wants to be there and wants to put in the work. So yeah, I feel for all my old buds and for anybody who I don't know there, but did happen to work with this person in that situation. Cause
yeah.
Betrayal of trust is not an easy thing to get over.
I think it's worth noting too. Brett. Sorry, the IGN is doing everything right. They're doing everything they need to, and I think they are handling this just as well as they possibly can. You know, they are going through and taking down a lot of his old reviews and articles, which is hard to do. You know, that's not what you want. You don't want to remove content from your site, but obviously in this case you do. So just shout out to IGN for handling it the way they are. That's not
easy. It's been crazy watching Dan Stapleton really jump into the Reddit threads, jump into the Reset Era threads, and kind of really be present in these conversations. He tweeted this week, FYI, we've seen enough now, both from the thread and our own searches, that we're taking down pretty much everything he did. It's a process, but you'll start seeing stuff come down tonight. And then he, his colleague, Justin Davis, tweeted, deeply disappointed and upset that it's looking more and more like we unwittingly hosted work that was directly lifted from, or at best, heavily derived from others. I assure you we are taking very active steps to remove it all and make it right. I feel betrayed. Obviously, you know, Steimer mentioned Brian Altano's response, him talking about how Philip in his video talked about his passion for video games, how it kind of rings falsely, because if you truly had the passion you say you do, then why would you be taking other people's work instead of doing the work yourself and wanting to get your opinions and your passion for the game that you're talking about out there? And obviously, when you work at a major outlet like IGN, you're going to get assigned games that you're not that crazy about. That doesn't mean that you can plagiarize somebody else's work if you're assigned a review. And it's been really kind of a industry-shaking thing for us, because it's unfortunate that people who are working really hard at IGN are feeling the fallout from this, and their entire site's integrity is being questioned. And that sucks, because there's a lot of really talented, hardworking folks over there who've done nothing but do the right thing that are now getting cast in this guy's shadow of, you know, like, can we trust anything at IGN? And that's awful. And not to mention all of the publishers that this guy has worked with, all of the reviews that have to come down that, you know, they're going to have to try to backfill. It's like, it's a hot, hot mess. I feel so bad for them.
I have a hot theory that could be very wrong. Oh, okay. But I'm wondering if Philip had his work ghostwritten. And I say that because unless he was just cuckoo bananas to go on this video and say, I dare you to find more plagiarized content from Jason Schreier, who kind of like gets the scoop on everything. You don't do that.
Don't dare the internet to do anything.
You don't dare the internet to do anything, let alone that in a public video, which I know he's now deleted. So I'm wondering if he had content ghostwritten and he literally thought there was nothing else plagiarized. It's just a thought.
I don't think so. I think
that you'd have to pay that ghostwriter, and I don't know. Didn't he come
and on the salary you make
videos
at IGN and living in San Francisco?
But I think you can get ghostwriters. I think you get ghostwriters for very cheap. I'm not saying I have the correct theory. I just said it's one out there, and it's the only way I can think of why he would tempt people to go out there and find things that are he knows are there.
Yeah,
but no, I saw
it's still to me. It still means that it's bad, right?
Oh yeah, of course, it's awful. If he's
plagiarizing other people's work, or if he's using a ghostwriter who's plagiarizing other people's work.
It's not good.
It's all bad
news bears.
It's not good. You should not be working as a journalist, an editor at one of the top if you can't write your own content. Anyway, it's also just sad because, I mean, obviously what he did is completely and utterly wrong. But it's like, did you not have anyone there to say, why are you going to put out this video? Why are you plagiarizing content? What's going on? Are you in a place where mentally you are overwhelmed? If so, reach out. Don't be plagiarizing content. Don't put out this video. If anything, if you want to try to secure anything that's left, put out a heartfelt apology, own up to it, and move on. But I think what happened is he felt like he was backed into a corner, and granted, he brought all this upon himself. And then he's like, I'm just going to put something out there. And didn't quite think, even though the video was put out a couple days later. It's just bizarre, to quote one Alexa Ray, cuckoo bananas.
This
is indicative of the generation that we're in now, of how somebody who started as a YouTuber and then got a job at one of the top gaming journalism sites in the industry did not probably have the training that a journalist would have. Like when I went to broadcast journalism school and got my degree, we had an entire course just on ethics, on media ethics. And all of that stuff is covered. And it's crazy to think that this isn't just common sense, that you need to take a course on ethics to know, hey, you shouldn't do that. But I mean, that's the kind of issues that we're going to run into when there's kids growing up in a YouTube era. They start watching YouTube when they're in their teens, start streaming when they're in their teens, and then they just come up the system not knowing or having somebody there to tell them what's right and what's wrong. I mean, we all hope that they have that moral compass inside to say, this doesn't feel right. I shouldn't be doing this. This is cheating. This is stealing. This is wrong. But sometimes people don't have those. People don't have that internal guide, and they need an outside person or an outside force to say, yo, don't do that, bro. Mm-hmm. That ain't cool. Maybe that's the case here. I'm not making it. I'm not condoning. I'm not saying what he did was okay. I'm just saying, like, I hope that we don't see more of this for that reason.
Oh, you know, other big outlets are like having a lot of internal meetings right now. Does anyone need to own up to anything? Because hot damn.
Right?
No, I think that's true. Definitely going to be more asking the question of, do we now need to start, for new editors, running things through plagiarism sites, making sure that nothing like this happens again. I'm sure IGN will definitely try and put some sort of
policy
system like that in place. Yeah. Because once you get burned once, like, because this is terrible. I just feel bad for the people who now have to hustle and get a new review done. Like, whoever reviewed Dead Cells right after he did,
it was Brandon Terrell.
Good on you, man. Like, that's not an easy thing to do. Number one, based on the situation on why you have to do it that quickly. And number two, just reviewing a game quickly in any sense sucks.
Yeah. It was called a re-review. I remember them using that term, and I'm like, wow, that's a thing now, I guess. We have to make sure. Yeah. I think what, I don't know. I think if, it's all, you know, checking and maybe plagiarism is just part of the interview process now, you know, like double checking on what they know. And, like, I don't actually know what, if Philip went to school, or it sounds like he just did YouTube, right? Before IGN. Did he do anything else? Do we know?
I don't know. I don't know much about this man.
It might just be a thing of, like, have you gone to university? Do you know the rules around journalism? Do you know?
Well, the problem is we couldn't really look at his resume and trust it.
Oh, and that too.
Because he copied and pasted his LinkedIn resume too.
You're right. He did apparently someone found that he plagiarized even his LinkedIn by literally copying off a job description and putting in his bio, like making it seem like that's all he had. And I mean, who knows if that's true?
Yeah, should be pretty easy to figure out if he actually graduated from these places, because you can just call the registrar's office.
Yeah, there's definitely some paper trail stuff.
Did so-and-so graduate? Yeah. Yes, no?
I just can't imagine that there's still a genuine passion for video games and for what he was doing to blatantly plagiarize so much content. I've never worked at IGN, so maybe it was something else about the allure of working there that he didn't like the work of writing reviews or previews or a resume. I don't know. But I'm
then
just
don't take that job.
No, that's exactly it. But what I'm wondering is maybe in the beginning, I don't know. I'd like to hear his thoughts, obviously, but I don't know if we'll ever get that.
But the problem is if you can't talk to a person like that. They aren't to become real. They're never going to level with you.
They're not front facing. They're always putting on a mask.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if down the line he opens up. Maybe he's finally getting, because he did delete his last video. So maybe he's talking to some like super PR firm. Like, how do I save my life here? Like, how do I redeem myself?
But it's back up. People already copied it and reposted it. Like, it's what's done is done, man.
What's on the internet. There's a lot of damage control to do here. That's for sure.
Yeah. Indeed. Well, listen, we could probably keep talking about this for quite some time, but it's time to say goodbye. Naomi, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show again. It was so great to see you and to hear about Everybody Games. And you have a Patreon page where people can go and see more of your content.
Yes, yes. Because you guys are on Patreon. I support you guys. If you guys go to patreon.com/NaomiKyle, that's where you can find it. It just should be clear, though, that's like you're helping by supporting the Patreon, you're helping, you know, fund the continuation of Everybody Games. But there's also other video content that I want to do. I am working on, since I reached my first goal on Patreon, one of the goals was to make a once a week video game news show. So that's going to be shot out of here, same studio, but it's just going to be a wrap up of all the news, kind of like how I did The Fix, but on a much smaller scale, only once a week, and only covering the topics that, you know, I care about and that I think most people want to talk about. So that'll be something that'll be coming out hopefully this month, but I did get the gig out in Germany. So, oh, hold up. My phone's ringing. Sorry. it might hopefully happen at the last week of August. So if I can get it in. So check out my Patreon. Definitely if you guys like video game content and other things. A lot of
fun stuff.
Are you
still streaming?
I haven't, I've kind of taken streaming, you know, I've stopped doing it, regularly. So what I think I'm going to do, is see if, what I've been exploring actually has been doing multiple platforms instead of Twitch, just to see how those go. And so there will be more streaming in the future. It's just not set in stone as to what the schedule is for that.
We hear you there. Yeah. Our streams are few and far between as well. Well, it's please tough. Do go check out her page. Check out Everybody Games. You can get it on podcast services, just like you can get What's Good Games. Yep. Thank you so much to everybody for tuning in this week. Again, even if you can't support on Patreon or you can't, you know, do tips or donations or anything financial, a like helps, a share, yes, a subscribe, a review, just a little bit of your time helps both Naomi and helps us and helps lift female creators, something that we talked a lot about last week when we were talking about Level the Pain Field. So please head to her channel and stop by and say hello. And we will be back next week with lots more news and lots more gameplay to talk about and more details on that awesome happening that's going down at PAX, because Gamescom kicks off. Naomi's going to Germany, and there'll hopefully be lots of juicy news stories for us to discuss. Until then, have a great weekend, everybody, and we'll see you next time.